Welcome to This Complex Life, a podcast where we explore the intricacies of wellbeing and relationships. I'm your host, Marie Vakakis, an accredited mental health social worker, family therapist, speaker, and mental health educator. Coming to you from the lands of the Bunurong and Wurundjeri people, join me as we demystify mental health, break down stigma, and navigate life's messiness and complexities one conversation at a time. And just a little reminder, information in this podcast is for educational purposes only. Anything said should not be taken as a replacement for medical, clinical, or other professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. This podcast is not a substitute for professional mental health treatment and advice. If you or someone you know requires support, please contact a mental health professional in your area. Thanks for listening. Hello, and welcome back to This Complex Life. Today, I have a return guest, Dr. Jenny Brown, here with us today. And the last episode, and I'll pop a link to that in the show notes, we talked about parenting. And today we want to talk about some of Jenny's earlier work. And it's a book that I really loved and also found confronting. And I think I flung it across the room a couple of times. The book Growing Yourself Up. But before we dive right in, could you just brief the audience a little bit about your work, Jenny? Maybe kind of what was happening around the time you wrote that book.
Yeah, well, Growing Yourself Up, and very importantly, Marie, it's got a subtitle, How to Bring Your Best to All of Life's Relationships. So that tells you straight away it's about relationships, not being a self in a vacuum. And it's a book that I really wanted to give my clients. I was recommending particular books for clients that wanted to manage themselves in their relationships better. And who doesn't want to do that? And I wanted a book that had really good case examples to bring it to life. I wanted a book that was equally relevant across genders. Most of these books have so many examples about women. So I wanted a broader book that spoke to men with plenty of their examples as well. And I wanted a book that represented Bowen family systems theory in a really accessible format. And there were books out there with great case examples, and there was a book I used to recommend that was really good on theory. So I wanted to bring them together.
Wonderful. And for those who don't know a bit about your background, so I was rereading the book as a refresher, and you started off in law. I don't think I remember that.
Well, I didn't last very long, Marie. I escaped the study of arts law and moved across to arts social studies that took me down the wonderful route of social work and then family therapy and all of the fascinating clinical experiences that field of work has offered in the early days, working with families in foster care and alternate care. And I've gotten into research early on and training in family systems and family therapy. So it's, and then lots of teaching, setting up the Family Systems Institute in Sydney, Australia, which is an institute to teach people how to go deeper with Bowen's amazing theory, which I discovered while working and studying in the USA back in the 90s. So, yeah, there's a little bit more to throw in to the bio.
Amazing. So if you could sum up like one key takeaway or one kind of key message that this book tries to highlight for people before we get into it a little bit more, what would sort of be the one kind of takeaway? Like if someone had read the book and they recommend it to a friend, they're like, oh my gosh, you've got to read this. It will do this for you, or it'll help you with this. Like, is there like a key message that you're hoping readers will take away?
Great and tricky question, Marie, to pull out one thing. I will say that I laughed at the introduction that you love the book and you would also throw it across the room at times. And I get that feedback from people, which makes it a hard sell, doesn't it? It's confronting, because this is a book that is not about fixing or changing others or analyzing others or diagnosing others, which is the easiest thing to do. This is a book about how we're all affecting each other in the back and forth of relationships. And so if I can change the part I'm playing on how I'm being a challenge to others, how I'm affecting others for good or for ill, and I can learn that, then I can be a mature grown up that will bring benefits both to me and to others who are important to me. That wasn't a one-liner, was it?
No, well, it makes me sort of. I jotted some of those things down, and it's sort of that how we affect each other and what's the part that I'm playing. So
Great, great
that's fun.
summary.
You mentioned at the start of your book, it was a paragraph that really struck me, and I'm just going to flick through to the highlighted bit of when you had lost your mother, and then about over a decade later, your dad. And there's this one bit where you sort of say, I was overwhelmed, had this overwhelming sense of emptiness as I contemplated the loss of a parent who I could make proud. And I really thought that really struck me as even sometimes when we're not in conflict or not in distress, we're still sometimes doing things relationally.
Yeah, so often outside of our awareness, Marie, but yeah, that was such a profound time in my life that really got me working on myself rather than all the training I'd done to help others, which I realized came out of my own family experience, being the helpful one in my family, and the experiencing being orphaned in my 30s, losing my second parent, and thinking, gosh, who's there to be that special person to validate me? One, it was an overwhelming grief that I realized I hadn't attended to well when my mother had died a decade earlier, and made me think about how my family of origin avoids those difficult topics, and we go into distancing. But two, it also helped me to see that I would steady myself by making my parents proud, by achieving, by and that is something that is quite unreliable, that isn't a good roadmap for being resilient in life, needing other people to be proud of me or validate me. So it was part of the awareness I had from studying Bowen family systems to see how I could borrow from others. And I'm not saying that it isn't great to appreciate and validate and be proud of family members, but being dependent on that to be steady in life is an issue. So, yes, it was a big time in my life realizing what it was like to be the remaining older generation at an early age, having my siblings, but not having a generation above me.
I think it's something that a lot of listeners might really get kind of caught off guard with when they're faced with something like that is, what does that mean for me? And what does that mean for me if I'm not pushing against this or to please this person? And it really makes me think of my work with adolescents. And we talked about in another episode, I forget whether it was you on mine or mine on yours, but you can develop your identity based on that dynamic or that, push against someone. And I thought that was a really vulnerable thing to share, but also really highlighted that even someone who's got all this knowledge can still have a moment of, oh, there's a
Oh,
piece there
absolutely.
I can tend to.
Yeah. It's something I have so valued, Marie, about those who have trained me with Bowen family systems, is they share their own work on themselves in their families as much as the way they lend a hand to their clients. We're all in the soup of relationship challenges and opportunities together. And us helpers don't stand in this separate place of having everything zipped up and sorted out.
Amazing. You use this term in the book, borrowing maturity, and you use maturity kind of throughout the book. Can you just highlight, like, what does that mean and how do you conceptualize maturity? Because It's different to what people might assume.
Yeah, well, certainly it's not just extra years that guarantee maturity or growing up. It's how we manage the stresses and strains of life in ways that don't impinge or make life difficult for others, I would say, is the core of maturity. I use the word maturity in the place of Dr. Murray Bowen's word, differentiation of self. It doesn't completely capture the meaning of that elusive concept, differentiation. But I think it's the closest to it. It's about maturity in our different contexts, in our relationships. And I think you also asked Marie about borrowed maturity.
Yeah.
And this difference between a solid maturity that grows out of self-awareness in the ups and downs of life and working out what I stand for, what are my principles for managing myself versus borrowed or pretend maturity is being a chameleon and just fitting in with others to secure ourselves to be stable. Or as I mentioned before, borrowing maturity by putting ourselves in positions where we invite people to praise us, validate us, rescue us, care for us, all of those things that we invite people to steady us rather than learn to cultivate our own capacities for being a steadier self.
Yeah, I mean, it does roll off the tongue a bit better than differentiation of
I
self, I
think
think.
so. Yeah, I think so.
What
But it's
struck.
also a misunderstood concept. And the key
Yeah.
difference is I'm using it as something we've got growing up opportunities or maturing opportunities at every stage of the adult life cycle, right into old age. I've had clients say, oh, I wish I came across these ideas earlier in my life, but they make profound changes in how they relate to their adult children and their partners, and it makes a big difference at any stage of the life cycle.
Yeah, it sound and what struck me, it's always I love reading material like this because sometimes you'll hear something or read something and it gives you a different analogy or a different metaphor or something to explain to clients. I see in a lot of pop culture stuff, people want this either extreme, like, you have to have these really firm, strict boundaries, or you have to be really, and what I'm gathering from this approach is it's fitting in this grounded, centered part of yourself where you're not looking to be rescued, but you know how to ask for help. You're not overcompensating and smothering someone, but you're not completely distancing yourself and pulling away. Like it's a more fluid, flexible, but attuned way of being. Like, how would you
Yes.
describe that to people who maybe want like a quick fix or a what do I have to do? And maybe recognize the complexity in
Yeah.
that.
I'm going to step back from your question just for a moment, Marie, because I do want to say to people listening that we all inherit a certain amount of capacity to manage ourselves. So we don't all start with the same toolkit for maturity. And learning to be gracious to self about this is what I've inherited from the generations of my family. It has some gap and it's nobody's fault. And to not try to grow up too quickly or beyond what your capacity is, just we all start from where we're at. I think that's really important and that also comes out of Bowen theory. It's on a continuum. There are not immature people and mature people. We all have our maturity gaps, and some more than others, just because of what has been passed down the line of their relationships generationally. And then this getting the balance, I think that was your question, wasn't it? About not going too far in one direction of being a rugged individual to being overly dependent on others. It's finding this balance where you can be a connected person, present, a resource to people, but to at the same time not lose the capacity to think for self and manage as an individual. And where things come undone is when we focus on the other and lose our capacity to think and take action on behalf of us, or the other direction, which is we focus so much on being an individual that we are distant from others and we can't tolerate upset in any relationship and we're always running away. So it's finding that ability to stay connected while holding on to our own uniqueness as an individual. And that, that's a laboratory for growing up, just practicing that all the time. And you use the word boundaries, Marie. And I just had a client, a parent client I was working with earlier this morning, say, I don't think boundaries is the right word. I think where my energy going is the right way to think about it. That if my energy is going into managing me, I'm not going to have boundary issues. If my energy is going into reacting to others, I'm going to invade their boundaries and they're going to invade mine. So I thought that was a great insight this morning from a parent.
Absolutely. I really like that, especially because we're recording this around Christmas time. It really does test a lot of our coping skills.
Surely does, yeah. But it's a great opportunity to observe ourselves in relationships, and that's always the starting point. Observing as neutrally as we can without judging, blaming others, blaming self, and being curious and interested and watching, oh, what are my triggers here and how do I respond? And what's that, how does that affect others in my family? And just being a researcher is a great place to start.
Yeah, how would that look on an event like Christmas Day if someone was, let's say, going to their parents' house? What would they be looking out for if they're wanting to observe their own behavior? Like, where would someone start to kind of pause and reflect?
Great question for this time of year, as you say. Well, the first thing is we always start with self. So rather than think, oh gosh, what am I up against? How's everyone going to behave? Is this brother going to drink too much? And is there going to be a big upset or a fight here? Not to overfocus on what might go wrong or worrying about others, but asking, how am I going to turn up? What's one key principle for how I'm going to manage myself? And am I going to turn up as a 15-year-old, the age I was when I was growing up in the family, around the time I was trying to get my independence? Or am I going to turn up as the age I am now and respond to people from where I'm at now? A lot of people say to me, as soon as they walk back into the home of their parents, they experience themselves as a child again. And we can make choices about that. So just start with self, a couple of principles on how we're going to work at managing ourselves to not react to others. I had a client this week say to me for their family Christmas, which is a really big one because there've been years of cutoff, and this family have repaired cutoff and are coming together again for the first time in many years. So it could be quite intense, and it's the danger is expecting too much in terms of happy reunions because there'll be stress and anxiety. That's normal. But she said to me that her key thing she's holding on to is this word, let it go. They were her words. So whatever other people do and how they react, just let it go. I don't have to take it on. And she reflected also on how can I manage myself? And that's just pause before saying anything, remember to breathe. And so there are a few ideas.
Yeah, I just have to get the song "Let It Go" from Frozen out of my head to
I
concentrate on
know,
the
sorry.
next.
Yeah. Yeah. And
It's,
once it's in your head, it's
I
there
know.
forever. I hadn't made that connection.
It. I like that bit you said, how you can walk into your house and feel like you're 15, and I can see this play out. Like when I work with families, everything feels so loaded, and I can just picture someone walking in and maybe putting their jacket on the back of a chair. And their mum or dad, grabs it and goes to put it in the cloakroom, and they're like, "Oh, you always do this." And a neutral kind of action is loaded with this whole, my whole life, you've just told me I'm not good enough, and they see that as a representation. Like everything can feel really charged, and if you bring that to someone's attention, like, "Oh, well, if they just didn't touch it, then it would be fine." How does someone start to recognize the role that they play in those moments?
Well, it's different for everyone, and it's really hard to see the part we play in something. It's easy to see how other people can make our life challenging. And I do invite people when they read Growing Yourself Up to just read the examples and think, what can I identify that's similar with me in that example? I think in just having realistic expectations that us humans in our families are so important to each other, which means we're highly sensitive to each other, which means that sometimes we suffocate each other and make life really difficult for each other. And that's just what happens. We can be a wonderful resource in our families, and we can be a huge burden, but it's worth working on bringing our best to those relationships. A lot of people just want to find substitute families, and that has its place in terms of good friendship networks, etc. But working with our real families is where great growing up occurs, at its best, at its core, at its primary source. And if we're always avoiding it because we find people difficult, I think we're losing some great maturing opportunities just to be in the presence of someone who, when they're anxious, become very loud and dominating. We all do different things when we're anxious, and we might find that like very, very triggering. But just practice thinking that's how they are in stressful times, and I don't have to react to it. I can just let them do whatever they're doing because that's where they're at. Just having that capacity at a family gathering to choose not to react and have a little success at that. It won't be perfect. That is a great investment in the Christmas or holiday gathering. That's a growing up investment. Growing up means tolerating what is usually uncomfortable for us without running away or moving into just disguising the discomfort by being overly helpful or rescuing.
Yeah, it reminds me because I, before this episode comes up, I will have released one on boundaries. It makes me think in that moment, that's when you've got a chance to put in a boundary. It's not about your reaction to them because we can't get someone else to stop how they behave. But you
No.
might actually say, "I'm not going to listen to it. I'm going to step out." Or, "I can see you're really angry. It's not okay to speak to me that way. I'm going to come back in an hour." Like, how do people then use that ability to differentiate and that more centered sort of sense of maturity to then set a boundary? Because I think what people misunderstand about boundaries is it's about your role, like what you can do different, not getting the other person to change.
Yeah. Marie, I mean, we're in fraught territory here, aren't we, in terms of when to speak up and how to speak up. If somebody has never spoken up like that before, in terms of I'm not okay being spoken to that way, I'm going to leave right now, and they've never done that, I would say it's going to be a volcanic eruption. It's too much too soon. We start small in these things, and the first step to putting the energy into what's in my control, what can I manage in me, is just not to react to what's happening. Probably not to say anything. That might come later down the track when we've understood what and gotten more neutral about how the relationship got to be that way. And I do think therapy and coaching and training in family systems thinking is really useful for that. This is not easy work. And so I would say not to be too quick to define self. At the Family Systems Institute, there are family of origin small group that are run every year where people look at the generations of their family and work at getting more objective. It isn't a group about how to go in and define yourself differently with your family. That takes a lot of thoughtful and careful research. So I like those examples you gave for when people have done the work to really understand how did we get here. But I would say, as a starting point for people, just that capacity to not react to a reaction. And that might just be changing the subject or remembering, oh, I've left my phone in another room, and finding a way to remove yourself, not being in any way kind of defining self, especially in an anxious group context.
Yeah, I can see it playing out where I've got some clients who they'll be like, I told them, so speak to me like that. And I'm like, yeah, how did you say it? And they tell me the words. I'm like, well, then no wonder they reacted. And you see this dynamic of this back and forth conflict. But how do you discuss in your book, and I've kind of touched on, I've got a whole bunch of questions here that I've gone completely off track, but that's fine. How do you maintain these healthy relationships while also nurturing your own autonomy? Like, how do you find that balance? And this is, I mean, this book's targeted to adults. So it's really around, it's not just parent teenager relationship. This is adult stuff too. How do people like start to do that?
Yeah, it's so hard to answer it in a short sentence, Marie. It's why I value examples, different examples all the way through the book of how people start to do that. But the key is that you don't put on your autonomy hat on one day and your connection hat on another. Both hats are worn at once. That you work at, I don't want to shut myself off from people in order to be independent and autonomous. I want to be able to do both. That doesn't mean that we don't say to the important people in our life or to our colleagues at work or wherever, I need some space to really work on some stuff, and I'll be more available in a couple of weeks. How does that work for you? See, even that is negotiating our need for autonomy in the connection and inviting the other person to speak into it. So it's practicing wearing the two hats, one with the other.
When you say stuff like that to your family, do you get the eye roll and people saying, stop using your therapist voice on me?
Oh, I hope I don't say that to. Oh, when I say to, oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
Because I
that
hear,
example.
yeah, I hear this and I'm
Oh,
like, oh, that's what I would tell someone. But then if you're doing that all the time, people roll their eyes and they're like,
Oh, Marie,
just.
I hope to goodness in a podcast, I'm trying to explain something. I hope I don't speak that way using exactly those words. It's got to be right for the context. But
Yeah.
yeah. Yep. So I'm glad you pulled me up on that.
No, I'm just, I do it too. And I have people say, you've got your therapist voice. And I'm like, that's not different. It is. So maybe an example that comes to mind would be for me, like I'm having my dad's helping me with some home like maintenance improvement stuff. And so maybe that healthy relationship and own autonomy, that could be, I'm thinking of like, oh, thank you for helping me do that, but I'd like you to show me because I want to learn, rather than sort of saying, you always take over and you never let me learn this, or stop patronizing me. Like I could go down that fifth, and that's probably how I would have felt at like 18, 19. But now it's more like, I don't want you to do this for me, but I really love for you to show me. Like, is that sort of balancing that I can appreciate
Great
your
example.
effort, but this is my need in that. And can you show
Yes,
me
great.
and the conversation go different?
Yeah, I think that's great, Marie. A really practical and good example. And it also just accepts that at a different stage of life, we will be different in our relationships with our
Yes.
parents, with our kids at their different ages. I would say, it's not always important to find the right words. There's so much in books and therapy about using these words. And more important, it's what's my mindset and what's my attitude in terms of how I relate to others. So I love your example and just being able to action it, not just use words. To action, being curious. How did you do that? Do you mind if I watch that? Can you show me that again? Like we set a goal for ourselves, which is our autonomy. And then how do we live that out in a relationship?
Yeah, well, it worked. I have the drill bit that I need to make the hole in the brick so that I can put the board up. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Now I know what to do. And they've got the little drill bits there. And that could have been something I might have otherwise either said, oh, just do it for me, it's too much effort, or avoid it altogether.
Yeah, that's great. And you're touching on a key idea that I try to convey in the book, but it's another Bowen idea of over functioning and under functioning in a relationship, that seesaw. And you're showing your example shows how to ask for help from someone without becoming dependent on them and always being in the one down position and letting them be in the one up position, which is how I describe it in the book, the one up and one down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not a question I had to touch on, but that's a really good one because one of the things I see from people is they're so scared to be in that position that they then do the opposite, which, and that's what struck me when I read the book for the first time. A lot of my responses were to pull away, thinking like that's the healthy, mature thing. And then this book, that's the bits I wanted to throw it across the room, was like, oh, that's just the other extreme end of I don't need anyone's help, I can do it myself. Because I don't want to be dependent. So, how do people understand that we're relational creatures and we function in community and we need collaboration? And some people are so scared to be dependent on someone that they don't let anybody in. That's the other end of that, the overfunctioning side.
Yeah, indeed. And distance is really attractive, and especially as life is getting stressed and pressured, that pulling away from people. And I think it's useful to be really intentional about how we distance, to acknowledge I need space. We all do. We all need some space, but I need space in order to re-engage well. Not to escape a relationship. And the flip side of it is I need to engage with others, but not allow them or invite them to take over for me.
Amazing. This all sounds like hard work. What's the
It
point?
is.
Like
Sorry.
what's the benefit? Like if someone's reading this, it's not a quick fix. It's a way of understanding yourself. How do we sell it? How do we sell the benefit of starting to do this work?
Well, so many people read it and say what you've said, Marie, which is so many light bulbs go off, but it's confronting. So are you prepared to be confronted, but in a helpful way that can grow your life satisfaction and your strength of relationships? They do go hand in hand, but I can't sell a false promise that it's easy. It's not. And it is a lifelong effort, but it's a rewarding effort. And it's what I have found in discovering this really fabulous theory of humans in relationships that Murray Bowen developed, is it's there's no quick fix, but you can see yourself in the example so readily
I don't know what you're
that
talking about.
there are just people say, "Were you writing this about me?" Because he was such an astute observer and researcher that it's wonderful to discover a theory, and hopefully people get that in this book that has so many aha moments. And then we choose what to do with those aha moments.
Yeah, I think it's a really good place to start for some people if they feel like talking to a therapist is a bit too vulnerable, that this is a neutral kind of like you can absorb the content in a really neutral way. Whereas I find even with my therapist, sometimes she does a lot of this work. I'm like, whose side are you on? And it's like, but this is just, you can just read it. You can take what you want. You know, I've got all these post-it notes and highlighted bits on my copy. But it's really helpful to start to kind of put those in place, and your case studies or the stories you share and the personal ones really highlight some of those tools. And I think it also shows, as someone who admires your career from as a learner who came across your work in my training, there's something really beautiful about hearing your vulnerability through this book and realizing, oh, no one's got this perfectly sorted. It's an ongoing process, and we can have empathy for, like you said right at the start, where we've come from.
Here. I agree with you.
Amazing. So for listeners who maybe will be wrap this up in just a moment, where can they, what can they do next? So if they want to grab a copy, I'll put a link in the show notes. But what sort of a key piece of advice you would maybe emphasize for some for listeners?
Well, I think doing the work to understand ourselves in our relationships and to read that, to do study, to do therapy or coaching is a worthy investment. It really is worth the effort. It's not about, this is not a theory about mental illness and diagnoses. This is a theory about all of us. And how we can all do a bit better, and the world surely needs that at the moment.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Jenny. And I look forward to maybe having another chat about, I'll find another way to get you on.
Well, thanks, Marie. I wish all of the listeners, along with you and I, the capacity to be calm observers, well, a little bit calmer than usual at our holiday gatherings.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. To keep the conversation going, head on over to Instagram or LinkedIn and follow me. If you'd like to keep updated with episodes and other interesting things happening in mental health, join my weekly This Complex Life newsletter, where I'll share tools, tips, and insight. There's a link in the show notes. Got a question you want answered? Shoot me an email or a DM. I'd love to hear from you. And if you enjoy the show, I'd really appreciate it if you could leave a rating and a review. It helps other people find the podcast.